and welcome to the first ever Dobbies podcast. I'm Louise Midgley, a gardener and garden writer for the Sunday Express. I'm joined by Dobbies Head of Horticulture, Marcus Isles, and we are here to talk about all the things you can do in your garden this spring. Marcus, would you like to tell us a little bit about your role at Dobbies?
Yes, certainly, Louise. Welcome, everybody. So I've been in gardening ever since I left school at 17 and now head up a really great team at Dobbies. We scour the whole of the UK selecting fantastic plants and gardening products to bring into our stores. And that's been a fantastic opportunity for me to be able to use 30 years worth of experience in the horticultural industry.
Oh, wonderful. Well, today we're going to be giving advice on a range of topics that will hopefully get your garden looking beautiful this spring and summer. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of gardens, large ones, small ones. So if you live in a flat and you just have a balcony, or you just want to grow things on a windowsill, or you've got a great big garden, we'll try and cover them all. And the topics we're going to cover are how to inject colour into your garden, getting the most from your beds and borders, preparing for summer, growing your own produce, and spring lawn maintenance. First of all, let's talk about how to get the garden organised after the winter.
Yeah, really now is the time when the garden is starting to jump into life, and customers with a little bit of good weather want to actually get out in there and start to tidy up. But it can be a bit daunting on where to start. So I think the best thing to do is to go through every border, trimming down any of the herbaceous plants that have if you've left the foliage on over the winter, which I would recommend to protect the plant. But this time, when all the new foliage is coming through, now's the time to be trimming those back. Also, a little bit of a prune on roses. If there's a bit of dead wood or you've got some crossing branches within the roses in your rose border, then starting to prune those back. You can look at fruit trees as well. If you've got fruit trees where you've got any dead wood that needs to be pruned out and any last minute bits of tidying up that need to be done. The main thing with clearing up all the plant debris is making sure that there's nowhere for slugs and snails to hide, so that, you know, your new plants coming through aren't immediately devoured. So clearing up that old debris will make sure that you keep them out of the way. Then the next step is looking at a top dress, so putting some fertilizer down, which will help to boost the plants into their new season spring growth. And finally, a little bit of mulching, so some garden compost or some manure around on the borders will really help to add some organic matter back into the soil, which will help and give you a really good boost to your summer flowers.
Yes, I think you're right about the slugs. We've had a bad year, haven't we, because it's rained so much. I know that I've just been doing a little bit of weeding in my garden to try and get on top of it, and there are slugs and snails absolutely everywhere, so I've been putting them in a bucket. So Marcus, if you had to pick your top tips for injecting colour into your garden right now, what would they be?
So I think the most important thing is to plan. You see a lot of customers that are coming into garden centres at this time of year or shopping online, and they get a little bit confused about the amount of choice. So there's way, way too many plants for them to be able to fit in one garden. So I try and tell people to sit down, look and plan. There's loads of advice and inspiration on social media or gardening magazines or television programs, and sit down, work out a plan, work out the sort of things that you want to introduce into your garden, work out a color scheme, look at your garden as well. You've got to be realistic about the garden that you have and the location that you have. If you're in a shaded area, then you've got to make sure that you select plants that are suitable for that location. Right plant, right place is a very key thing to remember. Making sure that you've done an assessment of your soil as well. If you've got a very light sandy soil, you've got to be able to select the right plants for that. If you've got a very heavy soil, then you've got to be realistic. If it's clay and it becomes very damp, then also face into that issue as well. So stage one is planning. Stage two is make sure you select things that you like. So the color schemes you like, the sort of flowers you like. Are you looking for a very contemporary look in your garden, or are you looking for something that's a bit more of a cottage garden style? So again, use social media to be able to select that, or gardening magazines, etc. And then finally, you come down to your selection process. So if you're wanting an easy maintenance garden, then picking out things like shrubs and herbaceous plants that just need planting once and then just a bit of annual maintenance. If you like something more colorful and you want to do like bedding pots and bedding containers and hanging baskets, there's a bit more work involved. But of course, you can have a fantastic riot of color right the way through the spring and summer.
Oh, that sounds lovely. But I think you can also add pops of colour in your garden with soft furnishings and garden furniture, or even take on a project by maybe repainting those chairs and tables that you've got that need repainting. You know, it's a good time to do that. And maybe some colourful umbrellas, of course, would be lovely, wouldn't they?
Yes, certainly. And introducing different colour pots and things in containers into your planting schemes. There's a fantastic selection of pots right the way through from a very traditional terracotta all the way through to very clean lined black and white containers to give you a more contemporary look. So yeah, you can again get a lot of inspiration through from Pinterest or from Instagram, which will inspire you for the sort of look and feel that you're wanting. And as you say, painting fences or trellis work or an archway or a bench can just give you that extra pop of colour.
Now, what about advice for beds and borders? Because actually, a herbaceous border is quite tricky, isn't it, if you don't really know what you're doing? And it's nice to get continuity of colour throughout the whole year. So what sort of simple sort of ideas could you give people to get their beds and borders looking lovely?
I think the most important thing is selecting the height. People get very confused about heights of plants. And so depending on the width of your border, I've got quite a lot of narrow borders in my garden. So I do a lot of very sort of mixed ground cover plants. So they're only really growing up to about 60 centimeters or so at the maximum, and then trailing down to the front. So it really helps me with the selection process and making sure that you've got sort of low ground cover plants at the front, the medium plants, and then introduce the spike of color. So the lupin or a delphinium or a hollyhock or something, or a foxglove.
Yeah, focal points, yeah.
Yeah, that can really help to break up the borders and just put those around in to give you those little pops of vertical colour.
Mm. And I know we're really keen wildlife gardeners, aren't we? So we've discussed this a few times. What sort of plants would you advise, you know, are going to bring in butterflies and bees and make the garden really healthy?
Wildlife gardening, of course, has been popular for a long time, but it's gaining in popularity as people are realising that we really do need to be focused on protection of wildlife and helping the bees and birds. What even in terms of how you look after your borders, making sure that you've got a little bit of an area that is not tidied up too much. So you've got some nesting areas for the bugs and the other insects, and maybe for hedgehogs, etc., and other wildlife. Feeding, of course, is very obvious for birds, but also for other plants. So making sure that you've got enough flowers that are blooming right the way through the year. So even very early flowers like hellebores that are flowering over the winter, and winter flowering honeysuckles and things like that. So making sure that you've got a nice sequence of flower for as long as possible. It's also good for you because you get to appreciate the flowers.
Absolutely,
but also
yeah.
It's very good for the insects as well. So the plants like the buddleias, the butterfly bush, that is great. But any of the flowering plants that you can introduce into the garden, foxgloves are wonderful to see flowering because you can watch the bees as they burrow their ways into the flowers to get the nectar, and then they come out covered in with pollen.
Yeah, they do. Last year, I cut a little triangular bed at the end of my garden and I filled it with plug plants of wildflowers like bird's foot trefoil and valerian, and field scabious, I think, also came up. And I could not believe how many insects, especially butterflies, came into the garden towards the end of summer. It was quite a shock. So it does go to prove that if you do plant the right plants, wildlife will come. It's just a magnet for them. It's wonderful. So
I think we're trying to encourage people to become less fanatic about their weeds in their lawns as well, because they are, you know, plants that will flower, and also areas of grass that you can just let to grow. So let it grow, let the plants flower, and then you will attract more insects and the pollinators into the garden.
Absolutely, that's so true. So I think the secret to having a beautiful garden throughout the whole of spring and summer is really always in the planning. You mentioned that earlier, actually. You know, if you plan ahead, that's the secret to getting everything working well. But how can gardeners get that continuity of colour? What sort of plants would you recommend growing that are going to give, you know, a long show? Repeat flowering plants perhaps would be good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of cottage garden plants, so herbaceous perennials. For those that don't know, so a herbaceous perennial is a terrible mouthful, but it's a plant that you can plant at any time, but especially good in the spring, and that will flower through the summer, spring and summer, it will then die down over the winter and then come up again next year. So there is a lot of plants that are fantastic for repeat flowering through the summer months. So geraniums, the hardy geraniums, fantastic for that. One of my favorites is the one called Roseanne, which is a fantastic blue.
Oh, that's a lovely one. Yeah. It just never stops, does it? It just goes on and on. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And it's just starting to pop up in my borders now. And the foliage is really attractive as it bursts through the soil. And every year, of course, they grow and grow, and you can actually split them up and move them around the garden as well. So that's a fantastic one. Nepeta Six Hills Giant, which is a fantastic catmint, which...
Yeah, great for bees.
Yes, absolutely, can get smothered in bees. Yeah. And it really does flourish. It can even work on a very dry border. I've got a border right in front of my house, which absolutely is only about a few inches deep of soil. And it just bakes during the summer, but it blooms beautifully over that time and spreads out across the pathway as well, which looks fantastic.
Oh, lovely.
And another great favorite is Erigeron carvicianus, which is a fantastic little daisy, which is quite a modest little plant, but it will self-seed around the garden. It covers the soil, so it keeps down the weeds. And you almost need to see it as sort of like a little bit of a backdrop to all the other plants that can grow through it and around it. But it is amazing. It's starting to flower now in the gardens, and it won't stop until the frost comes.
No, it's lovely, isn't it? I like it because it starts off with white flowers, and then they go to pale pink, and then they go to darker pink. So you always have three different coloured flowers on the same plant. But yes, you're right, it does self-seed, and especially into dry, you know, dry stone walls or into gravel. It's wonderful at self-seeding. But, you know, you can take it out if you don't want it. But it's a lovely plant. Great for the front of the border as well, or just in pots, I suppose.
Yeah.
I also have to flag up Verbena bonariensis because that's great for wildlife and also amazing for butterflies, and penstemons because they repeat flower. And then I quite like things that self-seed around the garden, like aquilegias, because, you know, they're quite good value for money. And if you don't want them, you can once again take them out, but it's good to have them, isn't it? So, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Verbena bonariensis is a fantastic sort of back of the border plant, or one that you can have growing through other plants, because it just gives you those wonderful spikes of colour, which will carry on all through the summer.
And what about, because now is a good time talking about planning ahead to get sort of tubers and bulbs and corms into the garden, or get them growing in the greenhouse if you've got some, you know, somewhere frost-free, because I just love begonias. They do so well in my garden, and they seem to cope with all weathers in the summer. You know, you never know what you're going to get. So they're very versatile. So a wet summer, they're fine. A hot summer, they're fine. You know, they cope with drought and rain and everything, especially the lovely pendulous ones in baskets. So what else could, you know, gardeners maybe get going in there? Well, it doesn't have to be a greenhouse. It could be in a conservatory, couldn't it?
Yeah. And or in a well-lit windowsill as well. So, you know, begonias, yes, absolutely. You know, they're just such good garden performers, easy to grow. There's a fantastic array, as you said, the pendulous ones, also upright ones. So fantastics in tubs and hanging baskets. Then beyond that, dahlias have had a massive renaissance in the last few years.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are so many different shapes and forms of flower, from the big spiky cactus types to the pom-poms, the really tight small pom-pom varieties. There's lots of different foliage colours, sort of the deep bronzy coloured foliage, dahlias as well, with the most scarlet sort of red flowers. So there is something for everybody in dahlias, and it's just really selecting through. And I would suggest, really, you almost want to picture like the most beautiful bunch of flowers that you can want to pick from your garden.
Yeah, yeah.
So combine together different shapes and colors and forms. So two or three colors, three or four flower styles, and then grow those. And then you can appreciate them in the garden, but then you can also cut them and arrange them and use them inside as cut flowers. Gladioli, of course, are also fantastic corms to be planting out as soon as the frost has finished, to give you those fantastic great big spikes of color. You can get dwarf ones, which you can put closer to the front of the border, and then the old traditional great big tall ones, which can go to the medium and back of the border, giving a fantastic spike of color during the main part of the summer.
Oh, perfect. People have really embraced the grow your own movement, especially this year. And now is a good time to get loads of different vegetables planted by seed. But before you answer that question, can you also give me some advice on what you can grow if you just live in a flat or an apartment? Because both my children live in apartments and they love cooking. What sort of things can you grow on the windowsill, you know, or even a balcony, or would be easy for them?
So the first thing you can try is microgreens. So these are, you know, seeds that you can sprout in a little tray. You just put them onto a bit of kitchen paper. I grow them on my windowsill. You know, they're really expensive if you buy microgreens in the supermarket. So putting them onto the kitchen paper, scatter the seeds, keep them watered, just spray them a few times a day, depending on how warm your room is. You need to keep an eye on them. And literally within a couple of weeks, they'll be sprouting through. And as soon as you've got something just an inch or so high with a couple of seedlings on, then they can actually be, you just prune them. And then, you know, you can make fantastic, you can use them for garnishing, you can make fantastic sandwiches. Great thing for kids to grow, because they don't have to wait too long. And the nutrient content and the vitamin content in microgreens is fantastic. It's huge in comparison to the fully grown plant. So really healthy and quick to do. And you can add flavor to any meal or use them for garnishing. Then beyond that, the other things that you can do with this are these little micro propagators now, which you can grow your plants in inside. So some of them are just have a domed lid. Other ones have lights attached now. So if you suffer from lack of light in your kitchen area or somewhere where you'd like to grow plants, then these are little propagators that have LED lighting included with them. So that gives you much more opportunity to grow a wider range of things.
Oh, that's fantastic, yes.
So there's no excuse, really, even if you haven't got any outdoor area. Then beyond that, if you've got a little balcony and you want to grow in containers, there are some fantastic ranges of seed which have been specially selected for growing in containers. So they're not too vigorous. They crop well, so they'll produce a lot of vegetables or fruit from a very small plant that's in a container on a balcony or in a very small garden. So I would select those, and those are quite easy to select if you're shopping online or looking in the garden centre.
Perfect. And also you mentioned there about encouraging children to grow vegetables, because they would like to do the cutting of those microgreens, but also they can be encouraged to grow easy sort of things like courgettes or marrows. You know, it's great if they can actually be encouraged to grow something and then eat it at the end of the process. Would be wonderful, wouldn't it? I think it gets them hooked on gardening at a very early age.
Yeah, there's been quite a sort of distancing between where plants come from and where vegetables come from, you know, because a lot of people live in cities and they don't come into contact with these things. So yes, it can be a fantastic educational opportunity to be able to show children where all these particular plants and fruit and veg come from.
Yeah. And Marcus, do you grow your vegetables in the ground or do you grow them in pots? Because I grow nearly all mine in pots now.
Pots and raised beds. I've got raised beds just along in front of my greenhouse. So I think it's just easier. I live in quite a rural location. So I've got deer, rabbits, slugs, snails,
oh,
everything
wow.
is trying to fight with me
yeah.
to eat my produce before I get to eat it.
So, right.
raised beds make it a little bit easier because you can put a protector over the top of the plants. I do a lot in raised beds. It also means you can make sure the soil, I brought in topsoil to go into those raised beds. So it does make my life a little bit easier. And you're a bit higher off the ground, so it's a little bit less backbreaking than actually doing it in the border itself.
Yeah, that's true. But so for people who live in an urban environment and just have maybe a rooftop garden or a balcony even, or just a courtyard, growing in containers is probably quite good for them. You can grow your potatoes in potato bags. That's so simple. You could even use an old compost bag if you don't have a potato bag, and pots for tomatoes, as long as you've got a nice sunny sheltered site. It's so easy to do, isn't it? It doesn't take up much space either.
There's no limit, really. Most vegetables will grow in containers, even fruit bushes, etc. So you just need the right compost. So generally looking at a John Innes compost, just because it's a bit easier to keep watered, and you get longer life from a John Innes compost.
Yeah.
It won't get saturated if we get a lot of rain during the summer. Mm. And then just making sure that you've got the watering under control and feeding. So
yeah, and you can even get a solar-powered watering system, can't you? You know, as long as you've got a big bucket of water and put the hose into the plant from the bucket, and the solar power will, on a timing system, will water it if you're that forgetful, which some people are if they're busy. You know, they are forgetful, so that's
and
quite useful.
People do worry as well if they do a lot of work in the spring, and then what happens if they do go away on holiday, and who's going to look after things? So yeah, getting a watering system in place can really help.
That does help, doesn't it? Now, everybody loves a beautiful lawn. So if there's one thing we should do to improve the quality of our lawns this week, what would you think that would be?
So for the early part of the season, it's really, there's a little bit of a plan. There's normally quite a lot of moss that will have grown over the winter. There's a lot of lawns that seem to be in damp situation. We had a lot of rain part of the year. So moss can take over quite easily. So there's also the dead grass that has accumulated over the winter months and through the summer last year. So that needs to be stripped out. So the first thing is to do raking, or scarifying as it's called. So this is a good bit of physical exercise as well. So if you're not going to the gym, or you need to be around at home, then get a wire rake. So they just got the wire tines in it, and a good half an hour on the lawn doing a bit of raking will be a fantastic workout. It will also, you know, it'll strip all of that moss and acid thatch, as it's called, which is the old dead grass that's in there, out of the lawn. And then you can actually look at reseeding. So there are a lot of the little repair kits now that you can get for the lawn, which are a fertilizer, and also they've got some grass seed in there. So if you end up with some gaps in the lawn or some patches, then that's a fantastic opportunity after you've scarified to actually introduce that into the lawn, which will only take a matter of a few weeks then to sprout through and give you a much thicker, healthier lawn coming up to this summer.
Mm. And also, you could always leave a little section of your lawn unmowed. That's the sort of really good thing for wildlife, even if it's just a little meter square somewhere, or at the end, a strip at the end by the fence, because, you know, all sorts of insects and bees and little small mammals will love that, and it'll encourage them into your garden, and that helps as well with the health of the garden.
Yes, we've been finding that a lot of people have been going for the more pet-friendly and child-friendly lawn treatments now. They're worried about putting something that has a chemical on their lawn, and then the children going out to play or the dog being on the lawn. So there's quite a few of those brands now that are available that you just need to check on the packaging. But yes, I think people are not really wanting to put weed killers onto lawn. So a bit more of an appreciation. If you want to get rid of a dandelion or whatever, you can just dig it out. But even daisies flowering on the lawn, they look attractive, and they will
help the
bees pollinating. So I would be less inclined to be looking at weed killers, and more to just appreciating your lawn. Giving it a regular cut will help to cut down any weed spread and control of moss as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Marcus. That's been really helpful, with loads of useful advice there, and I'm sure gardeners will find it very helpful.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned for more podcasts in the future when we'll be discussing lots of other topics. Happy gardening, everybody. I hope you have a lovely season.